Disclaimer. The views and opinions expressed on Nerdytalk do not reflect those of Anime Herald. Due to strong language, listener discretion is advised. Now sit back and enjoy the show. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. It's time for Nerdytalk, the only podcast that knows the difference between a bank frame and a keyframe. I'm Mike Ferrer, and I'm joined by Matt Brown and Anthony Simpson.
Yo!
Howdy.
So, how you guys been? It's been a while since we've gotten the whole group together.
I'm doing okay. Been on computer problems and then some stuff with personal life. But other than that, I'm okay.
Fantastic. And you, Matt?
Yeah. I've just had entirely too much awesome in my life recently, and I'm looking forward to settling down. And this weekend is kind of the first opportunity.
You should get that checked. The doctor says that if your awesome lasts for more than 4 hours, you have a problem.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, what can I say? I was in New York City recently, and the awesome just rubbed off on me. Something fierce. Been trying to shake it off, but, you know, like, I got twitches and stuff. Sorry, Tokyo.
I believe that wasn't awesome. I believe that was meth.
Meth? Shit. Meth is for everywhere else.
Good point. You're in New York. You do coke.
Exactly. There's plenty of strippers for it.
Fair enough. With the small talk out of the way, we're here to talk anime.
Oh, we're talking about anime? Peace out, bitches.
Specifically, this is the, as of recording date, the end of the anime season, so we've been eagerly sitting, watching, recording countless hours of shows just for the purpose of sitting there and, you know, bitching about them like we do. Before we get into that, though, I'd like to take a few minutes to just talk about one show in particular. It's one that grabbed Matt and myself pretty well, especially as the season ramped on. That would be Shirobako. Shirobako, for the uninitiated, is an anime about making anime. It's exactly as meta as it sounds, and it is just wonderful.
Yeah, the title means white box.
Exactly. And really, it revolves around five distinct personalities that work in different aspects of the industry. There is Miyamori on production desk, Emma on animation, and so on, so forth, and yeah, you get to see how they go through their paces to try and make the anime that people absolutely adore, or, you know, send death threats to the staff about.
I.e., so, it's five cute young women. Oh, it's, yeah, that kind. Of, it is that kind of show.
Oh yeah,
because every show is that kind of show.
Yeah, that's true, but they do handle it well, I have to admit.
Yeah, it's sort of a post-Moe show, in the sense that they still want to show cute girls doing cute things, but they've recognized the fact that that alone is not enough, and they have to, you know, do some actual character writing around them, and some scenario writing, so that people don't get bored just watching cute girls being cute, which I assure you is easier than it sounds.
Oh yeah, definitely. And at the same time, they did a good job of giving a crash course in how the industry works, too. They really took that angle, and they did a great job of building it into the framework of the show.
Yeah, I would say they take a sentimental view on how the industry works, but, you know, that's appropriate, I think, for a TV show. They're trying to show you sort of the, you know, a little bit of the drama and the setbacks, but mostly a positive view on how people in the anime industry live their lives and do their work. So it's definitely appreciated how they. I think it's well balanced how they did it. You know, it's not like all roses or anything. So.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's definitely an idealized take, but you kind of have to expect that going in. You can't exactly have an animation studio saying, yeah, it's going to be hell, but we do it because we enjoy it. I mean, that would be like, say, Well, going anywhere and ask him how it is to work in there, those expecting an honest response.
I mean, I think if you consider the a similar show that did horribly, Rail Wars, it's sort of this a similar thing where you're being taken behind the scenes of people who are working in an industry that is, you know, for better or worse, well liked. And you're seeing how they go about their business. And, you know, obviously Rail Wars was a terrible flop because they sort of fell back on tropes that had nothing to do with trains and train security and train lines. And they could have done so much with that show that they just had apparently no clue how to do.
Oh, yeah, that show was, for lack of the excuse upon, it was a train wreck.
But Shirobako did not have that problem. In fact, they did a great job. I think they did the best job they possibly could portraying the industry that they work in. And I think that's all I have to say right now. I am hoping that we can really get into it, but I'm not sure where to start.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, it's kind of hard at this point just because the episode just aired and we... I'd rather not go too deep of a dive yet. Maybe down the line we will, but at this point it's probably a bit early to start, you know, really dissecting it.
Well, so they have all these conversations in the show, and that's kind of what I wanted to highlight. That it's all work related, right? Like their personal ideas come into it. But they're talking about very, at least on the surface, and, you know, I know it's high-level conversations, and they're not, you know, people who work in the industry don't really talk on that level. They talk on a much more detailed level. But, they talk about things like, just the very bare-bones stuff. Like, you know, the older guy who works as an animator, he's seen a lot more things and how they move. There's a particular scene somewhere in the show where somebody outside of the company suggests to them that, you know, hey, this guy is your absolute perfect guy for animating this, and he works for you. You don't even know this. You know, there's a lot of stuff like that, and they talk about, you know, certain aspects of the industry, like the the keyframe animation, hand-drawn animation versus CG, and, you know, how sound fits in. And I feel like they cover as many things as they cover all of the topics that you would think of for how a modern anime production works. And I really appreciated that.
Yeah, likewise. And like you said, they don't go into as much of a detail as you'd expect from, you know, a real life circumstance, but they do teach enough, like they give enough of the actual, you know, jargon, and they mix that in. They actually build this around a pseudo realistic environment where you could kind of see this happening on some level. I mean, it's not like, say, animation runner Kuromi, where it just goes balls to the walls 5 minutes in.
Yeah.
I love animation runner Kuromi, but that's another story.
I think Shirobako has a few moments like that. You know, when Aoi Miyamori starts out at the company, she's, she's running packages to animation supervisors, and there's a little bit of that, you know, her crazy driving. And that's all good fun. But they have some pretty serious moments too, where they're getting into the meat and potatoes of what they want to do with the show, and, you know, the director's reluctance to really focus and get it done because he's not really sure what he wants to do is kind of endearing to the audience. And I don't know, it's just I think the term white box really fits, because you're sort of getting an intimate look on how these people operate.
Definitely. I couldn't agree more.
And I'm not really sure how much more I'll say about the show, but I'm really sad it's over. But I also think that it couldn't have ended better. I think they did a great job with how they ended it.
Oh yeah, likewise. Likewise. They ended it the best way they possibly could have.
I think American TV has this problem more often than Japanese TV, but just things go on and on and on. It's like you know, you get your new lease at life as a TV writer or creator, and you just sort of sit back and like soak it in, and your show just fucking falls apart.
Oh yeah.
I think the fear of death, which seems to be more common in Japanese productions, is healthy.
Oh yeah, because I mean, it does kind of spur them to put out the best thing they can, because they're not going to have another season to do it. And like I said, while I wouldn't mind another few episodes of this, I'm kind of glad it ended where it did.
Yeah, I think it said everything that it needed to.
Definitely.
I don't think they left anything on the table.
Yeah, they tied it up pretty neatly, which I'm glad to see. This could have easily become an absolute nightmare ending where it just kind of, you know, fell apart at the seams.
Yeah, you see that a lot with shows that are ending earlier than they expect. But, you know, that sort of calls attention to a weakness in the mindset of the creators too. I think as a TV show, you know, ratings are king, and you should be prepared to end it on every episode.
Oh yeah.
Although I understand that, you know, if you're producing animation, you can't really do that because it's a very, you know, it's a very long lead kind of production. You have a lot of work to do, and you can't just change gears at the last second.
Yeah, because the money's already changed hands, the episodes have been bought.
Yeah, well, and just the fact that, you know, drawing, doing the drawings and the animation supervision and the in-betweens, all of that takes a long time.
It really does.
So they can't really, it's a little bit different from, I think, from live action film, where the biggest challenge is getting everybody's schedules lined up for filming.
Definitely.
Yep. I mean, that's pretty much, I guess we didn't really talk specifically about what we wanted to say about this. So I guess just saying a few things about it is enough.
Yeah, I mean, I adore the show, but there's only so much you can really say about it, too, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there was one line that, seeing it go through that second season, I thought was really interesting. That whole, why did you get into this, you know? Especially during the latter part of that second season, there was always that conversation of, why did you get into anime? Why did you start doing this? Why do you keep doing it, and could you see yourself doing anything else? And I thought that was really interesting because it's something that I ask myself a lot, because I've been writing about anime for, God, how many years now? 13, 14? And it's one of those things, like, you hear the responses like, well, I never really thought about it. I just kind of put my nose to the grindstone and worried about getting the next deadline met, getting the next job done. And by the time I looked up, it was this many years later. And it's really kind of true. Like,
yeah, I don't think that's unique about animation. I think a lot of people, when they choose a career, you know, they pour themselves into it and then realize that it's 10, 15, 20 years later. And, you know, it's an interesting exercise, I guess, to ask yourself why you've done it, you know, why you chose what you did, why you're still doing it. And some people may decide that they don't want to do that anymore. But, you know, some people decide that they are where they're supposed to be. And that's just part of life.
Yeah, true enough, true enough.
I feel like a little bit of the show was wish fulfillment, too. Like, it sort of began with the wish that the five young women would end up working in the industry together. And, you know, against all odds, it seemed like the show held the same wish and was bending over backwards at some points to make it happen.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It really seemed like some of these things just too convenient to come together, you know? I have to admit, though, Zuko-chan got dumped onto the entire thing. Like, through almost the entire show, she got dumped on.
Basically, she was the actor? I forget.
Yeah. Zuko was the actress. She, like, bombed out of her first audition, then she ended up having to work at a bar, and it's, like...
Yeah, that's one of those things. It's actors who manage to find and keep a steady work stream going. They make a pretty good living, but it's a really hard thing to do. It's hard to get your foot in the door, and it's hard to keep getting work once you've started.
Definitely, because it's one of those cases where, I mean, it's an incredibly competitive arena, and if you can't hash it, you're as good as screwed.
Yeah, I think she definitely had the hardest job of all of them, probably.
Definitely.
Although the writer girl sort of, I think she sort of got treated better by the show than perhaps she should have. Because writing is another thing that's really difficult to get into, and there are a lot of writers, and some of them very competent, and it's hard to get noticed. It's, I think, any kind of creative profession. Probably the key animators have a little bit of difficulty finding work to begin with, too. But once they have it, you know, obviously it's a little bit better.
Yeah, I agree with you on the writer, too. I mean, that was just one of those things where it was, like, way too convenient again, but...
Well, it's not like they treat her super well. I mean, yeah. she has to work for it, but there's definitely an element of convenience there.
Yeah, definitely. It was a bit contrived, for sure. But it worked. I mean, the entire show just turned out to be fantastic in the end.
Yeah, it was kind of like, for me, it was all of, it was like all of the fun of the last element, the last episode of Golden Boy, without the raunch.
Exactly.
It was, there were a lot of episodes of Shirobako that were just fall down funny. It killed me.
I mean, there are some parts that it's like, they were just too fun. Like the mute animator girl that was like pantomiming everything, or that scene in, was it 22, where you had the director and the cowboy get up there.
Yeah, it was the second to last episode, whatever that was. I guess that all comes with the territory of the show, but they really stepped it up with that one. That was,
oh yeah, that
one was funny. Like the whole, you could really feel with that episode the kinds of challenges that an animation production team faces when they just want a simple conversation with the mangaka who's, you know, writing the original story for their show.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the character of Funny Story there, I mean, that was, you could tell, it was literally just a wall between the studio and the manga author. And
yeah, it's Mr. Funny Story. That was good.
Yeah. Hen Hanayashi.
Yeah.
There, Hen Hanayashi.
Funny Story. Yeah.
I kind of wonder, like, if they've ever – that was channeling something that they actually ran into at some point. Like, I mean, we've had cases where famously we've had directors butting heads with the manga creator at times, but which
– yeah, that's kind of wish fulfillment too if you think about it. Yeah. The butting heads aspect is probably much more common than the, you know, than the miraculous
romance.
Yeah. you know, the miracle of being on the same page, as it were.
I mean, I swear that at some point, like...
Because the money for it, the animation usually shows up way before the manga creator is prepared for it. And, you know, even if the manga is past that point story-wise, it usually winds up being like... The anime season will end on a completely random and fucking bullshit note, you know? It's like, well, this is where this chapter of the manga ended, so I guess we'll end there too, even though it makes no sense and it's a terrible season finale, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I still wonder, though, like, the insistence of the creator, the fact that they did reference like an adaptation where they complete of his first work where they completely changed the style or something like that. I do have to wonder if that was a Karikana reference, because it seemed like the same thing happened with Anno and what's her name, the author of Karikana no Jijo.
Yeah, I don't know, Masami Tsuda. I don't know that they were specifically referring to that, although that is one of the more high profile cases of a director vehemently disagreeing with the mangaka or vice versa. I don't know that they specifically wanted to call attention to that feud, but I would not be surprised if this is more of the rule than the exception.
I wouldn't doubt it. I really wouldn't.
I think it's probably very common for the manager or editor of the mangaka to be the stonewall who keeps the mangaka working and keeps everybody else out.
Definitely.
And, you know, and then when the artist manages to catch a glimpse of what somebody's doing to adapt his work, he, you know, blows the cork because that's the first time he's seen it.
Right, and it's completely different than what he was hoping for. Like, well, that's happened. There's a lot of cases where that's happened. Like, Sailor Moon was another big one. Revolutionary Girl Utena was another big one. Like, the TV adaptation was just so completely different that it created an absolute negative reaction from the creator.
Yeah, I think a lot of that is probably avoidable, and I think that's what the show is trying to address, that the publishers stonewall the animators and keep them out of the mangaka's business so that the... You know, so that the comic artist can keep working almost like a slave. but, you know, that has consequences. They have to be able to pencil in time for the animator and the mangaka to have some face time.
Oh, definitely. It's one of those things where it's like you'd think it would probably help the situation a lot more.
Yeah, but...
But it doesn't.
I think from the publisher's point of view, the anime is just free extra money, and it is not beneficial for them financially to divert the mangaka's attention in any way.
Right. And I can definitely see that logic. It's flawed logic, but it's definitely there.
So yeah, I think the show is... trying to call attention to that in a way that they, you know, that directors and comic artists have a lot more in common than they would seem to have when they're, you know, having these fights. But I don't know. It's hard to say. I mean, I think from the perspective of the original artist, I would feel really protective of my work, and I would probably be critical of anything that the animator was trying to do. But, you know, we've talked about this before. I feel like when you're sort of, you know, you're licensing your work out to another medium, and that is not your profession, and you need to show a little bit of deference to the people who know what they're doing in that field.
Absolutely, because what works on one level won't always work on the other.
Yep, exactly.
All right, moving on. The anime season is coming to a close, so given that we are seeing the finales airing this week and over the next couple days, I figured I'd reach out to you guys, see what you would choose as your top three of the season.
You figured you would do that, eh?
I thought it was an idea.
Didn't have any better ideas?
I totally didn't write this on a napkin when I was completely drunk.
So you were drunk, but you just didn't write it on the napkin.
Exactly.
Cool.
What were your picks, Matt?
Oh, God. My picks. Actually, this is pretty easy. One of them we just talked about for 30 minutes, and I'm not going to talk about it anymore. Shirobako. It seems appropriate since it's ending this season, even though it's a continuation. And I've got no complaints about that show. I loved every minute of it.
Fully agreed.
What the hell else aired in this season?
Lots of other shows.
Yeah. Okay, so I hesitate to mention this show because it's not over yet. It's one of the those shows for girls that probably will run for 4 seasons, although it's hard to say. It may end up being a paltry 39 episodes, but it sure as hell isn't ending this season. And that's Yona of the Dawn, or Akatsuki no Yona. And, you know, it sort of goes the route of a lot of shows like this. It's almost like a Pokemon plot. She's collecting these people who will help her in her quest to, I don't even know what. But the conversations they have and the scenarios that they face are really endearing, and I've come to really like the characters. And that's also what happens in these shows for girls. I kind of have a love-hate relationship with them. I don't know why I grow so attached to shows like this, but maybe it's my kryptonite. I don't know. I'm really enjoying it, and I think it will last at least one more season, if not two. And, okay, so Durarara is awesome, but I'm not really going to mention that because I think it's going to I think we're going to see that again in summer. Just a feeling I have. But if we don't see it in summer, then I will make sure to give it its due diligence by around then. So I have a couple honorable mentions that sort of share the third place together. I wasn't really sure what to think about Parasite, and I was just sort of watching it as it aired, and you know, it's got its high points. It's good production values. It has a lot of action, a lot of danger, but there's also, you know, a good amount of melodrama, and I wasn't really sure what to think about the characters as they, you know, grew into their situation. But I have to say, this past season, as they wrapped it up, I feel like it did everything that it could have to really round itself out. And I did start appreciating the characters toward the end. And I felt like it ended on a pretty positive note. So I have to say, I like the show overall. And the other one is Ald Noah Zero, and that one's a little that was a little bit difficult for me because I and Mike can attest to this. I liked every episode as I saw it, but toward the end, and especially at the end, I felt like the show had kind of lost its way, that it didn't have any overarching theme to build on. And at the end, it was just, your typical mecha ending where, the war's over, or at least, at a ceasefire, and like everybody's happy, and like there's this big hug fest or something, and they just end it. I felt ultimately dissatisfied by the show, even though I enjoyed all of the episodes as I was watching them.
Yeah, I have to. I'm gonna chime in there about that ending. I saw it today, and I kind of was disappointed in the ending. I won't spoil it for our listeners because I hope some things would have happened, but it didn't. But yeah, that ending did kind of trailed off there, and I'm like, well, like it's over. I'm like, all right.
Kind of like, well, that was a show.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't bad. Like, I'm gonna just quick chime in here. Like, it wasn't bad. I enjoyed it, but there were some things I wish it did in the end that it did differently. But
Yeah, I just wanted to include it in my positive mentions because, like I said, I liked watching every episode, and even after most of the episodes, I felt, this show is still pretty good. But I think in an overall perspective was when I started to realize that it was kind of lost. That's it for me.
all right, how about you, Anthony?
all right, so now I'll preface this by saying that two of the shows on my list are not actually done. They'll be done sometime after this recording's over. So my first show, it's one that I actually did a write-up for the site, and that is Death Parade. This was done by Madhouse, and I have to say, this show was just, it was just great. I mean, start to finish. I mean, a few hiccups along the way, but I mean, just about everything it did, it did it so well. I mean, it looked great. It had a really good cast of characters. The writing was strong. The atmosphere just it, the atmosphere made it. This the okay. So for anyone who actually hasn't watched this, basically the story revolves around these people called Arbiters, which basically they judge the dead. So after people die, they get sent to these bars, we'll call them.
They're
And it's
also
really.
the people who make up rules in the chess match. I think that's where the term came from.
Okay, because I have. Okay, I'm not a really big chess player, but I'm all right. So what happens is these people, after they die, they come to this. There's different bars for different Arbiters, so it's not all just like one, place for everybody. So when people come there, they generally don't remember that they died. They don't know they died, because usually one of the first things they're asked when they get there is, "What's the last thing you remember when you came here?" Most people remember their name, and they might remember some event right before they died, but they don't remember they died. So they have to play a game, and they're told that basically their lives are on the line. And as the game progresses, things happen. People start to get their memories back of their life. Maybe not necessarily at the beginning of when they die, but they might remember an event. Like somebody might remember a relationship, or they might remember something that happened to somebody they care about. And as slowly as it progresses, and they progress playing these games, basically the darkness within that person becomes more evident until the game finishes. Now, winning the game is essentially an arbitrary decision, because it doesn't matter if you win or lose, if you win, because you're already dead. You don't come back to life. And usually by the end of the game, people figured out how they died. But what's interesting is that when they're done playing the game and their darkness in their hearts come out, they're judged. Either that they go to reincarnation, they go up, or they go into the void, in which they go down. Now, it had a few little problems, mostly with some writing things, and in the ending didn't really solve everything, but it doesn't matter. It was so great. And that opening, I mean, that opening is just, that is like probably my favorite opening out of all time. And I could just listen to it every day. I'll say this right now, it's already my top five for the year already, if not show of the year. Again, Boruto comes out in later seasons. So my number two is a title that is titled Yurikuma Arashai, or which is the Ikahara show. This one I find interesting because I've actually never really, to an extent, watched any of his stuff to completion. Like, I've seen like four episodes of Utena, and I've seen like the first episode of Penguin Drum. But other than that, I've never seen anything of it. And what I find interesting in this one is that I'm not really into Yuri. Like, Yuri's not a genre that, like, I'm, like, looking for more material for. It's just, it's a genre that exists, and it's fine. I just, it's not one I'm penning for, like, a whole amount to devour a bunch of it.
So you're admitting that you're not a woman who is interested in other women?
Correct. But what's interesting about it is that it's like his stuff, from which I'm told, is very, a lot of symbolism and all that. I mean, this is definitely very heavy symbolism. Mm.
His stuff is usually layers upon layers upon layers.
Yeah, and that's what this is, because stuff isn't as it seems. Like, so the big thing of this story was that this planet exploded, and these meteorites come down and affect bears, which then they basically start devouring humans. So as a result, humans build the wall of severance between bears and humans so that they can essentially, so they can have their, this court sort of exist. Well, eventually some bears start crossing the wall of severance to live in the human world. And two of them are, well, there's a bunch of them, spoiler. But the two main ones that you focus on are Ginkgo and Lulu, I think that's how you pronounce her name. Who are these bears that came over to the human world? Well, Ginkgo, the main, so you could say the main bear of the two, falls in love with this girl named Kureya, who's this girl that goes to the school, but she hates bears because, spoiler, her mom got eaten by a bear. And of course, things aren't as they seem. But what's interesting about this is that this show is really, in a sense, almost really a criticism of how basically lesbianism is treated, in, at least in anime, or at least even in general in Japan. Because this show essentially is a saturation of something called Class S, which is it's one of the Yuri parts of Yuri genre, where basically two girls have very intense feelings for each other, but it's completely sexless. No physical contact, obviously nothing sexual in nature. And this exists until, the girls, say somebody graduates from school or gets a job, because then it's expected that you get out of this, you sort of grow out of this phase, find yourself a man, get married, and start having a family. And this show essentially is criticizing that, because it goes on about things like the Invisible Storm, which, if these girls, if any of the characters, which some of them do, engage in these relationships, they get excluded. The Invisible Storm gets a meaning that they're going against what society expects of them, which is, again, you could have these, you could have your little fun here, but don't show, have it be, very emotionally attracted to each other, but don't be physical. Don't take it past that. And bad things happen when people try to do this. Spoiler, they get eaten by the bears. That said, I am not going to... It's hard for me to recommend this show to people because it is, again, as you said, Mike, layers upon layers upon layers upon layers. And it's also makes
sensationalist.
Yeah, well, it makes a lot of other critiques. Like, it critiques because there's basically hardly any male characters in the show. Well, the one of the later episodes did have a male character, but for some reason he wore red heels and he clicked them like Dorothy does in Wizard of Oz. So I'm not sure what that's supposed to represent.
It's Kuniko Ikuhara being Kuniko Ikuhara. Just leave it at that.
Yeah. Well, see, there's these three bear judges at the Wall of Severance who are basically the patriarchy, because they have to prove, and again, I'm going to spoil some things here. So when the bears want to eat somebody, eat in the sense of, not in the sense of eating as hungry, eating in the sense of cunnilingus, they have to get approval from the Wall of Severance. So every time they have to talk to these judges, which again are the only male characters and thus representing the patriarchy, they have to approve it. So which then they have a thing that goes, Yuri approved, and saying that this is the time we have to approve that you're going to do this. And then it gets into the scene with this flower comes out of the girl's chest and there's honey on it. And there's obviously they're licking it. And of course, like I said, that's incredibly unsubtle reference to cunnilingus. But, animation quality is kind of there. It's not the best, which I was hoping to be a little bit better, but I mean, it's definitely serviceable. So that moves on to my last show I'm going to talk about. One that
I just want to say they obviously don't know what bear stands for.
Yeah.
Yeah, they kind of got that completely backwards there.
Yeah, well, so the last show I want to talk about is Yaru no Yatterman, or Yatterman's Night. Now, this is another one that really surprised me, because I actually had no intention of watching this when it came out, because I knew nothing of the Time Boken or even the Yatterman franchise. I'd never seen anything of it before. I never even heard of it before. So I kept seeing people on my Twitter feed kept saying, hey, you know, this first episode of the show is really great. You got to check it out. You know, it's really good. So I'm like, all right, on a whim, I checked it out. And you know what? That was a really great first episode. So I decided, well, I'm going to stick with it. And I have to say, it was really a surprise that actually how good it's turned out to be. Now, it has some problems, like animation quality's good, but not great. And if you don't like massive tonal shifts, don't watch this, because it goes from comedy to serious like all the time. But what's great about it is just it's the cast. For example, the main girl, Leopard, who basically she's the descendant of the Dombro gang, who was this gang that fought Yatterman back in the original series. And she finds out that she has to live in this poverty-stricken manner because she's being punished for what her descendants did, or what her ancestors did. So she decided that she wanted, because her mother got sick one day, so she decided, well, I'm going to go talk to Yatterman in Yatterman City to get medicine. Well, she finds out that Yatterman are basically not very nice, and her mom dies because she doesn't get the medicine. So she goes on this whole journey meeting up with her two companions, Boyaki and Tanzaro, who are essentially descendants of, again, of the Dombro gang. But what surprised me was just really how, I mean, it's a funny show when it's funny, and it's also really good when it's serious. Well, and I also have to mention this too. It is the only show this season that has a Mike Tyson like getting beat up by a robotic kangaroo. But what made it special for me was just really the whole journey to where they are now. And the latest episode had a really big twist. Like, you did not see it coming of how all this plays out, how Yatterman went from being so good to bad. You didn't see it coming. And again, like I said, there's one more episode left, and it airs, well, tomorrow is at this recording. That'll be the 29th of March. So I'm really curious to how it's all going to turn out. I hope it does well. I hope it turns out great. I know, again, like I said, with not having the Yatterman series been present here in America, or should say North America to be specific, that might seem like it's a barrier to entry, but I'd say give it a chance. I mean, it's pretty funny. I do want to bring up some honorable mentions. One is from a show that aired. Well, it's a show that aired last. It's been airing since last season. It's finished up this one. Is Crossanger. Now, people remember I pretty much hated Angie at first, but I think everybody did because just because of the way she acted. But what really has made me happy, at least some extent, is just how she's evolved over from the beginning, that she's basically not the same person anymore. And the series has really grown on me because I realized she wasn't crazy about it. I'm like, oh, I'm just going to keep watching because I'm not. Like, I just want to see if Angie gets her comeuppance. And in some extent, she did at times, but it has improved. Now, it has pulled some bullshit that Fukuda did in Seed, which made me roll my eyes real hard because I'm just like, oh, really? And, which is somebody's spoiler, surviving something that should have killed them. And if you're watching, you know exactly what I'm referring to. But.
Oh, shit.
I mean, I'm not going to say it's a great show because it's not. But it's steadily improved from being this show that's kind of this real controversial first two episodes to a show that I could say was, you know, it's a mid-tier shelf. It's a B. Like, I give it like a, at the moment, I'd give it like a B overall. But I was pleasantly surprised how it's turned out. So, yeah, that's my top three and my honorable mention. So what about you, Mike?
For me, it's actually been kind of tough because I've sampled a lot, but for a number of shows, I either dropped them earlier or I didn't get far enough in to really make final judgment. So I'm going to be leaving those off the list. All the ones I've seen all the way through, I'd have to say, obviously, Shirobako, because, well, it's Shirobako. It's wonderful. I love the show. Number two, I don't know why. It might be because of all the Shinbo stuff we've been watching for the podcast, but I really enjoyed Gourmet Girl Graffiti. I mean, it's not a great show by any means, but I just found it somewhat oddly compelling. Like, basically the whole premise is girl meets with friends, they eat food, something happens. I mean, that's literally what happens every single episode, but I don't know. It's just one of the things where it was just generally innocuous and fairly light watch that it just went down quick.
Now my question is, has it gotten to the point where they have to start pixelating the food?
Not yet, but honestly, sometimes if they did, it would be like, it would basically look like something out of a hentai manga.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was getting at.
They could put the browser's logo there and you'd be all set.
Yeah, I'm waiting for, if I hear anybody say that they start pixelating the food and then when the person's, during their eating, they're getting that, their O face and the screen goes white, I might watch it then.
Hey, now, you can't slap the browser's logo on unless somebody seems like they're in pain.
True enough. Yeah, as for number three, I was am torn because I did really enjoy Yona, but at the same time, what I've seen of Yurikuma Arashi, I've really enjoyed. What I've seen of Assassination Classroom, I've genuinely enjoyed. And I am definitely digging Yadaman Nights after your recommendation a few weeks ago.
Excellent.
People
are listening to my recommendations for once. Excellent.
Yeah, I'm really digging it. So it's really hard to pick because my problem is I've seen so much, but I can't give that final judgment, unfortunately.
Yeah, I'm going to also again mention Assassination Classroom, but that's only halfway.
Yeah.
And I just love how funny that show is.
Oh, it is. It's genuinely funny. It's great.
Oh, it is. Yeah, especially like the... how far did you get into it?
About five episodes so far.
Okay, I won't. Because there's some later stuff that's... I mean, there was a kind of a dip, and I think one of the episodes did have a little bit of quality dip, but, I mean, it was bound to happen. But, I mean, I'm loving the hell out of that show. It is genuinely a very funny show, a series. And that's hard. And normally why I don't recommend comedy is, you know, comedy being so subjective, but...
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's one where it could easily have gone very wrong, but it just seems to be taking all those right steps. And
yeah, if it continues like it is now, I could see it being my top, one of my top shows for the year.
Likewise. Still haven't gotten a Death Parade, but that's on my to-watch list.
Yeah, that, like I said, that was just fucking great. I mean, I know they didn't, like I said, they didn't answer all the questions, but it doesn't matter. I mean, like I said, the writing was its biggest strength. I mean, well, when you have the guy directing, it's also writing, that helps too. I mean, and the guy who created the original Death Billiards OVA movie. That, you know, that helps as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but yeah, that was just like, so that was Madhouse firing on all 12 cylinders there. I mean,
although your complaint that they don't answer everything, I think that might be an asset, because if they answered everything, there'd be no mystery, you know?
Yeah, I mean, which is fine. I mean, I know they're probably never going to make a second season, or an OVA or a movie, which is fine. I mean, where it ended, I think, sufficient.
Yeah, fair enough. I'll definitely be checking it out in the next couple weeks.
Yeah, you should. I mean, it was great.
Will do.
Something you said about Death Parade made me think. I've had a similar conversation recently where, to give it a little bit of background, one of my friends said, you know, he sort of looked online after watching Angel Beats for something similar, and the internet seemed to recommend either Haibane Renmei or Clannad. And something you just said about Death Parade made me think about Haibane Renmei. It was funny. It's like I, you know, when my friend asks me, I pretty much worship Haibane, so of course I'm going to recommend that.
Yeah.
Even though I haven't seen Clannad, but what you said about Death Parade, where they sort of started, you know, asking what the last thing they remember was. Haibane starts in a very similar manner, where the characters are actually named in their new lives according to the last thing they remember, and I found that interesting.
Yeah, I won't spoil anymore, because the people generally remember, like I said, they remember their name. I can't really spoil anymore because it'll ruin the mystique of it, but yeah, Haibane Renmei is actually something I do want to watch one of these days. I own it, I just never got around to checking it out.
I recommend it too. It's just a wonderful series. Definitely worth watching.
Yeah, Angel Beats is kind of a very similar show, and I don't know what's inspired by what, but I figure it's possible that it could have been inspired by Haibane. You know, where they're part of the show is obviously, you know, you find out pretty early that they're, you know, the very first episode, that they're dead, and they sort of start remembering things about their previous lives as it goes along. And that's definitely a theme in Haibane too. But I don't know. I actually liked Angel Beats a lot. I just watched it recently, in fact.
I need to rewatch. Yeah. I haven't seen it in a while.
I enjoyed Angel Beats. It was one of the few key shows that just didn't make me roll my eyes. And I just pissed off half of our listenership, but anyway.
Yeah, but that sound you hear in the background is our list, what's left of our listener base banning us.
Yeah, I know. I hate Modica Magica. I hate Key Visual. What am I? I'm some kind of inhuman monster here.
Hey, I don't like Modica Magica either, yeah. So I guess I am too.
I'm not impressed with what I've watched from Key Visual proper as well. But Angel Beats is just part of their staff, right? It's not like an actual Key Visual production.
It is Key Visual.
I mean, it's not Killarney Bay.
It wasn't one of their novels, right?
It was...
I think it was original.
Yeah, I think it was original anime, got a visual novel afterwards or something like that.
It wasn't based off of one of their visual novels is what I was referring to.
Right. I think the visual novel, if it hasn't come out yet, there is a visual novel coming out later this year based on it.
Yeah, well, that'll be pornorific, I'm sure.
Well, yeah, of course, it's Key Visual.
Yeah, well, yeah, because the game's coming out May 29th, 2015 in Japan.
Alright, yeah, so that might have been the biggest benefit then. I will say, this is one of those seasons where I've seen a lot of really offbeat and... excuse me. Really offbeat and borderline strange stuff. Like, Hue High Earth Defense Club Love. I tried watching this, and after the first episode, I was just sitting there saying, what the hell did I just watch?
Again, I think it's against the comp. I mean, I couldn't get it either. I mean,
I imagine you watched a show about a high Earth defense club.
Well,
that had relations to cute things.
It was like, well, I don't know. It's a magical boy show. I know that for sure. But
it's apparently the ending. I might just watch it not just for the ending. Apparently, what I'm told actually happens.
The other show I was thinking of was this one actually started like midstream. It's animated Wakaru Shinryo Naika or Comedic Psychosomatic Medicine, which is basically, it's a comedy, of course, like it's a short form, so take it as you will. And they try and explain various mental illnesses from things like depression to dementia, but typically about halfway through each episode, it ends up going straight into pointless sex jokes. So it's like, they try and get a point across, and then it's like, again, very offbeat. And for our last topic tonight, since we just covered the end of this season, let's look forward to the next. What three shows are you guys looking forward to the most in the spring 2015 season?
Well, I guess I'll start. My three are going to be Oremonogatari, or My Love Story. It's Madhouse. I read the first volume of the manga. It's funny. And I'm kind of somewhat a sucker for romance stories for the most part, so I'm going to check that out. Next is Punchline, which is an original series from MAPPA, which apparently I actually found out today that was actually founded by one of the people who founded Madhouse originally, which I did not know that. I've liked most of what I've seen from MAPPA, you know, except for Kids on the Slope. I couldn't get into that. But most of what I've seen, they've done really well, and they did, praised it last year, Rage of Bombogenesis, which was just, like I said, just fucking fantastic. So I'm really looking forward to this. I like kind of the art style. It's different. So I'm going to check that one out. The last one I'm really excited for is the Knights of Sidonia sequel, or second season, I guess you should say. Because I enjoyed the first, which was surprising, because I'm not really huge on like 3D CG and anime. Like, I don't mind in Western properties, I guess, mainly because of budget, so it doesn't look terrible. But this one, I'm enjoying it because I reviewed the first season of Knights of Sidonia, and I said it was great. And I'm just looking forward to what the sequel has to offer.
The big thing about Knights of Sidonia is, when's Netflix going to get it?
Well, I think you should be saying, and two, when's Sentai going to license it?
Yeah, that too.
Which, yeah, that's, you know, that's, I have to say, that surprised me. When I heard Sentai got, I'm like, wow. Yeah. That call just caught me off guard. I'm just like, oh. I didn't pre-order it yet, but I just caught me by surprise. Mainly because I'm supposedly was told that the broadcast version and the release version are different. Like, the release version obviously being uncensored. Even though that wasn't a whole bunch. I think mostly just, like, the women get nipples now. And, like, some scenes were added in. I think the endings of the last episode's extended. But, we'll probably get it, so we'll probably see it in the we'll probably see it in the summertime, then, if Netflix handles it like the way they did the first season.
Yeah, fair enough. I'm definitely interested, because that one, it's like, I know they've been kind of teasing the Netflix acquire, but we haven't gotten any solid information yet.
Yeah, because supposedly they have something else. Suppose I think it was Seven Deadly Sins, which I think that was from this season, or maybe it was from last. Supposedly they have a license to that, but nobody really knows. Suppose I think somebody Crunchyroll said they did, but obviously Netflix isn't saying anything because they haven't mentioned it yet.
Right.
So what about you guys? What are you guys interested in?
How about you, Mike?
You son of a bitch. The three I'm looking forward to, you know, no specific order, would probably be My Love Story. There's a really good buzz around it, I've seen, so I am definitely interested in that one. And it really is a good team working behind this. Otherwise, it would be Renee, which is an adaptation of a Rumiko Takahashi series, and anybody who knows me knows that I am a gigantic, well, I am a fanboy for Takahashi's work in general.
Yeah, Rinne is kind of a long time coming. It's it's been in manga form for quite a while now.
Oh yeah, and I've definitely read some of the manga because it does run in Shonen Jump. It was part of their it doesn't run Shonen Jump. It was on their I believe the Shonen Sunday site.
I know Viz was offering issues for free online for a while. I read some of it, but kind of fell off the wagon with that.
Yeah, it's a Takahashi series, so you kind of know what you're getting into. I enjoyed what I saw of the manga. I really did, so I'm kind of looking forward to this one. And for number three, I really don't want to go with the obvious, like, say, Nisekoi or Fate, because I'd like to kind of give my... Well, I'm definitely looking forward to them, but I'd like to use this to highlight Heroic Legend of Arslan, because I loved the old OVAs and stuff like that. I loved the old work. And I kind of want to see how the Fullmetal Alchemist creator can kind of brought this one to his own flavor, his own style, just because it's such a strong story, and it's one that's definitely got a lot of historical relevance behind it. So I'm very interested in seeing how that one turns out. How about you, Matt?
All right. Well, I do want to call attention to Fate Stay Night and Nisekoi. Those are probably the top two for me. Fate, because I have not actually seen the original TV series. So I'm a little bit, in the dark on that, and I found it very fun to speculate about, which servant has which master and that sort of thing, and what's going on behind the scenes, especially with the church. That's been very fun for me. So I don't want to just watch the old show and blow my load, as it were. And Nisekoi is a really fun show, and I expect it to continue to be fun. There was another one that I was sort of interested in. I mean, it's impossible not to notice Rinne. I'm not really looking forward to that per se, but if it's available to me, I will watch it. Just one of those things. There was one that I really wanted to watch, though. Oh, it's there's a Gainax show, and I'm really interested to see what they do, because I haven't really watched anything from them for a while, and just I sort of expect them to be what they are, but they've always been sort of they've always been hit and miss, but not like ordinary hit and miss. It's like either a complete flop or a fucking amazing, I can't talk enough about this show with them. I feel like that's their spectrum. They have one of two choices.
Okako no Pleiades, or as I like to call the Subaru of the anime.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it's a co-production with Subaru the Car Company, and they transform with magical car parts.
Yeah, that I'm going to watch only because my parents actually used to own a Subaru, and that became my first car, so.
Yeah, I remember you saying, I remember you describing that, just still, if anybody can make a good show out of that, it's them. But maybe not anymore. It's hard to say.
Well, I will say the original shorts that they released for that a couple of years ago, they weren't bad. They made it work somehow. So they could possibly pull it off.
And kind of on an opposite note, I expect nothing from the Kyo Anu show, but I may watch it, and I won't rule out the possibility that I could like it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm of the same boat. I mean, I have no expectations on Sound Euphonium, but I'll definitely give it a shot and see how it turns out. Yeah.
Yeah, I think I'll fall back on my... There's two shows I'm interested in. The continuation of Fate and the second season of Nisekoi. Yeah, those are the shows that I'll pretty much be paying the most attention to.
Yeah, I wonder how you're going to pronounce it now with that colon there was so... I mean, how are you going to pronounce it? I mean...
Nisekoi season two.
Yeah.
or I was going to say maybe Nisekoi colon. Because fuck shit their spellings. The yeah, because I'm sure if I wrote that on board, I'm sure my English teacher in high school would have just been happy to see that.
It's like, all right, so where's your subtitle? The subtitle is the blank.
I'm pretty sure they don't want me to call it Nisekoi colon.
Yeah, because maybe it'll shit out of ending or something.
I'm actually kind of interested in seeing how this Lupin remake turns out, the reboot, because, I mean, that could go one of two ways, and the last visit to Lupin, which was, woman named Fujiko Mina, was wonderful. They did a fantastic job with it, so I'm kind of hopeful on it.
Yeah, I've never really seen any, Lupin stuff before. That's what's kind of eluded me.
Monkey Punch hasn't really done anything other than Lupin that I'm aware of, so the new thing could be good. I'm thinking of, like, you know, the likes of Leiji Matsumoto, who he only ever does. This is stupid.
Star Blazers, Captain Harlock.
Yeah, Harlock. I was gonna get there.
I just,
you know, Harlock is basically his thing. Like, he almost always does Harlock, and almost and pretty much, you know, well, Star Blazers was like his one departure from Harlock, but he always does Harlock. So you know that if a new Harlock comes out, he's behind it and he knows what he's doing. You know, that sort of thing. I feel like Lupin is similar in that sense. Like, you never hear anything out of Monkey Punch that doesn't have to do with Lupin. So it'll probably be worth watching. That's a good thing to call attention to, actually.
Definitely.
I don't know. I really like. I mean, obviously, when you consider Lupin, probably the shining star of all of those film works was. It was Castle of Cagliostro, which is not like the other films, but I enjoyed all the others too.
Yeah, it's usually a fun series.
I'm dismayed in a sense that there's a Nagato Yuki spinoff.
Yeah. I'm gonna watch it.
I'll check it out. I mean,
it seems like, I don't know, like she's the quiet one, and it's like a fetish show.
What do you mean, like?
Well, I was being kind.
yeah. What do you mean, like? In that case, though, it's like it is a fetish show. It's wish fulfillment.
If you don't fetishize the quiet girl. You know, the quiet intellectual girl, then there's no reason to watch this, I think.
I'll give it a chance. I mean, or that might be one of those things I just push for time.
Jack Hughes.
Christ almighty there. Blow my eardrums out.
I'll give it a shot. I mean, I've been kind of wanting to see some actual Haruhi animation for many years, so...
Yeah, I still need to see the movie, but I'm going to wait till TV show gets released before I do that, so I can refresh myself.
So, is there any show that you guys think is going to just crash and burn this season?
Let me look here. Once we didn't
mention.
Probably if I had to guess. Thinking. That one probably will crash and burn, but my expectations are low for Triags X, so let's see.
Oh my god.
looks. Yamada-kun to 70 no Manjo TV. That one, I think that's going to... Because if people were saying, I don't think the animation didn't look too good, so I can see that one crashing and burning.
But Cute Witches.
Yeah, they said the animation didn't look too... Plastic Memories could, but you never know sometimes. I mean, I could be wrong. Ninja Slayer might. That one probably could crash and burn.
I'm kind of curious about that one, because it's like, it's Trigger, and Trigger usually does good work, but I mean, how far can you take that concept?
Well, and two, how many times can you keep getting hits? I mean,
that too.
Because, I mean, okay, they Kill la Kill did well. Well, I don't know how Emu Battle did. I think pretty much that was pretty average.
Yeah.
So it's one for one there, but I mean, that could be great, but like I said, it could also shit the bed.
Exactly. I mean, I'll keep my eye on it. I'll give it a chance, but
I would like to think that is it okay to pick up girls in a dungeon is going to flop, but I really don't think it will.
That's a popular light novel's pretty popular, isn't it?
Yeah, it's actually won awards.
Yeah, that one will probably do okay, even if not, it might just be one of those ones that they created just to sell the source, make sure the source material gets a boost, and then it'll be considered a success. But if it's winning awards and it's selling well, then that's probably, yeah, that's the one I think could probably crash and burn.
Yeah, I'd say for crash and burn, my picks would be Triage X, because I've already heard from a few good sources that's really just violence and tits.
Well, which I'm okay with.
Nurses, man.
And
well, it'll be epic.
Well, yeah, well, I'm not, I don't have a nurse fetish, so that's out of the question. But which violence and tits are good tits. For me.
Nurse tits are better than other tits.
No comments.
But yeah, otherwise I'd have to agree with Yamada-kun, because it's basically, it sounds like Anime Freaky Friday, and that's never a good thing.
Yeah, I don't even speculate on what's going to flop, because the stuff that I think should flop never does. I'm just going to bow out of this.
All right, fair enough.
you know, one that probably could flop is one that, well, the one I mentioned before about is Show by Rock. That could probably be.
Well, that one's interesting, because it's like, it looks like that's going to be one of those shows where there's no middle ground. It's going to either become really popular or it's just going to die out.
See, wow. The director's only done, he's only done two other shows.
The place is Midi City. Yep, flop.
Yep.
Yeah, he's only done two other shows, so this is like, I think it's like third.
I think this is going to be mostly an advertisement for the smartphone game.
Which is fine. I mean,
oh yeah, that's fine. I mean,
there's nothing wrong with that. I mean,
no.
I mean, those could be good. I mean, remember I mentioned about Rage of Bomu Genesis, and that was amazing. And that was based off an average game.
Yeah, true enough.
Yeah, let's see. He's directed before. The guy who's directing this did Ozoma and Slap Up Party Arad Senkai, which were both Gonzo shows.
Okay, it's going to suck.
Lots of drama.
Sorry, I have a very, very visceral reaction to the word Gonzo.
Yeah, I know you don't
care about them. You don't really see much from them anymore.
Yeah, it's unfortunate.
I don't know about unfortunate. I think they had a lot of bad bets and a lot of flops. And
you can't hit 100 either all the time.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know. It's like, I have a lot of respect for Gonzo because they tried things and they used new techniques or at least different techniques than the other animation studios were doing. And I have respect for them for that. But
yeah,
sure.
I think on the whole, their story writing was just, well, for lack of a better term, incompetent. And that hurt everything that they were trying to do.
Absolutely. They did. I mean, they always had, well, typically, they had that period, but they typically had shows that were really good looking. Like Genkutsu is still a fantastic looking show, but they just couldn't back it up.
I've got my issues with that show too, but I think on the whole it did pretty well because it was so unique in its animation technique and presentation. I think it had some serious story issues, but it came together okay. And they had some really stunning successes, like Last Exile, and I even thought Vandred was good. So
Vandred was fun. I enjoyed it. Here we go. The next show is going to be in July. It's called Sodagaseyu.
Is
It's based on a 4-panel self-published manga series.
Okay, it means I can skip it. Well, Sean said, I mean, I sometimes like those, but they're better. For me, they're better marathoning.
Yeah, it depends on how they take it. I mean, look at Azumanga Daioh, which is similar situation.
Yeah, or Puchimas.
Or Puchimas, yeah.
Yeah, which actually I just watched the first season of that not too long ago, because then I actually also watched Idolmaster for the first time.
I think almost everything that's based off of a Furukoma is completely dependent upon you watching it for several episodes at a time.
Oh, yeah.
Or at least the first several episodes you have to watch, because what that format can do is really dependent upon your continued support, as it were. I think most comedies are like this, actually, that the longer you stick with it, the funnier it gets, because you finally become invested in the characters, even though it's a format where you don't really pay much attention to them, you know, next to the jokes. But eventually you have to like the characters and their antics, and you find it funny. I think that's what most of those shows rely upon. I still kind of find it a bit of a mystery how Lucky Star wound up being funny out of the gate, because that's unusual, I think. Like something like what's the newer one? I Can't Understand What My Husband Is Saying. I think, well, that one was actually funny out of the gate too, but you know, there's always a little bit of a lull and you have to get reinvested in it with stuff like this. And that show took a while for that to happen for me. But Lucky Star was just, I don't know how they did it, but they just managed to be funny every time.
It was a fluke. They did similar with the show My Everyday Life, My Ordinary Life, Nichijou. And they couldn't nail that first episode seals the deal thing again. It was funny, but you'd have to watch like two or three episodes to really start to really digest that humor that first time. Like, with pretty much every other show of the format.
Yeah, it's like the pilot episode is something new, so you tend to laugh at it, and then it's kind of the same thing for a couple more episodes, and then you have to have time to rejigger your thinking about it to find the humor in, you know, the continued presence of the thing.
Exactly. All right, everyone, that's our show. Thanks for joining us. Remember to rate and subscribe on iTunes and Stitcher. It really helps us out. Till next time, this is Mike Ferrer signing off.
This is Anthony Simpson signing our bye-bye.
And this is Matt Brown. Goodbye. Good luck. Or something.
Have a great night, everybody.
Bye-bye.